You're listening to The Maker Podcast, a truly global portrait of the art of life.
Now, I see more and more that for my type of photography, the social side of photography is 90% of the picture.
Maker Podcast with Nigerian Dutch director and photographer Coco Olakunle. Welcome to the Maker Podcast.
Thank you, Mona. Thank you.
So what we're going to do is sort of set the foundation of who you are by answering the basic questions like, where were you born? Where were you raised? Let's start there.
Yeah. Well, I was born in Amersfoort in the middle of the Netherlands, but moved to Zutphen when I was a couple of months. So I was raised in Zutphen, and then but I've been living in Amsterdam now for almost 12 years. Yeah.
Okay. And why did you move to Amsterdam?
I moved to Amsterdam because I fell in love, but I wanted to go to Amsterdam anyway because I wanted to study in Amsterdam. So when I met Case, I just moved in and I never left. Yeah.
Nice. And what did you end up studying in Amsterdam?
Yeah, I studied human geography and urban planning on the University of Amsterdam.
Okay, you've got to explain human geography for us.
Yeah. Human geography is basically a study about people, how people move in time and space, how they relate to each other, the relationship between people and their environment. We have political geography, economic geography. Basically, human geography is all you need to know. No, sorry, not all. But human geography is what I think every human being should learn in high school, maybe. It's just the basics about life and the people around you. The connection that people have between cities, between in countries, between countries and between continents as well.
Okay, so, yeah. Cool, right. So in terms of the actual work that you do as a director or photographer, how does that fit into human geography? How did you come to photography?
Yeah. Well, I started photography when I was a teenager, but I think it all came together when after I finished my study, human geography, because I started photography when I got my first camera when I was 13, and I started taking pictures of myself and of my friends. And when I started my study, I used photography when I was studying, I was a very active student, so I did a lot of extra things next to my study. One of them was coordinating the study newspaper. So people had to send me their pictures from the events and the parties and all. And I thought the pictures weren't good because people just took the pictures with their phones. So I said, okay, I will go myself to all the events and I will take the pictures so my magazine will look nice. So that's when I started using photography for more than just myself. And I think when I finished my studies, I felt that I started to working in the photography museum, and I started working as art director on commercials and films. But I actually wanted to use my background in human geography. And it took some time before those two things came together. Like, human geography is my interest and photography is my passion. And I just wanted to find a way to do both.
Right. Okay. So you're looking for a fusion.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So this business of working at the photography museum, are you talking about foam?
Yes, foam.
Okay. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your experience at foam?
Yeah.
Just a little bit.
It was a really good experience. I think that's where I learned that to look at photography as an art form. And it became the best present. It was the best thing because, they gave me like the knowledge of photography and the way of looking at photography. And it became such a new thing in my life. It made my life really, let me think.
Is it like a professional thing that you're thinking
no,
about?
No, it's that after working there, I had this extra love in my life.
And that was so it enriched your life. It just made your life richer.
Yes, 100%.
So what made you, did foam come to you? Did you go to them? What made you walk through the doors?
No, I went to foam. To be honest, I don't really remember what. I think one of my sisters sent me the link, like, hey, they're looking for, you know, young people that want to work in a team. And I finished my study and I knew I didn't want to continue doing something in the human geography sector.
Okay.
I knew I loved photography, but at that time I didn't know how important photography would be for me later.
Yeah.
Like a nice switch.
Right.
But then when I started at the photography museum, the rest of my team, they all came from art schools. Mm-hmm. So I felt really alone in the beginning because I wondered, why did they pick me? Because I don't have this art background. And I really felt that was something you really need before you are able to talk about art.
Right.
And now I know that's not the case. And
that must have been awkward, though, because they had this pedigree and you didn't have it. They have this big stamp from fancy schools. And they probably used language that you didn't understand.
My team did, yes. Or they had their you know, art school jokes. Or,
yes.
And I felt that they had something like a certain freedom or whatever in their being that I didn't know.
Yeah.
So in the beginning I felt really, really like an outsider.
Yeah.
But that changed because I just had to find my place in it and also realize that having my background just brings something else to the table.
Yeah.
I ended up doing really, really cool projects that I'm still very proud of. Now at Foam Editions, which is the gallery in Foam, they still sell the first edition, which is two photographs of a young upcoming photographer. They sell it for 90 euros per picture. And
these are your pictures?
No, not my pictures. I worked on the idea. Because I wanted to...
So, yeah, explain what you did.
Yeah.
What did you do at home?
Yeah.
I know, so, I got in there. What did you do?
So, we did different projects, but the one that I'm most proud of is the first edition project.
Okay.
Foam has a gallery upstairs, and I don't come from an art background, so... And also in my growing up, my mother had art from the, she would borrow art. So you can, or rent art, sorry. She rented art. So we could have an art piece in our house and then you can have it for, I don't know, 2 or 3 years. And then you bring it back and you can pick something new. And basically that's for people that don't have money for art, but still
it's a clever solution though.
Yes
for exposing again, back to exposure, to exposing your children or yourself
yeah
to the outside world.
Yes,
that's a very cool solution.
I think now that I think of it, maybe that's also how I and my teammates came up with this idea, because I was so aware that people like me, and then I'm then I'm talking about, you know, our the social class that I'm in.
Right.
We don't have money to put art pieces on the wall. Like my mom is a single mom. She doesn't have that kind of money. So when I went into the gallery in Foam, I felt like this is not for me. Like, how am I gonna pay for this? But I do like photography, and I do want to collect or to buy, or I want to appreciate the art, or I do appreciate the art.
Yeah.
So that's how I came up with the first edition. And the first edition is a photograph, actually two photographs that you can buy separate or together for 90 euros per picture. And it's from a young upcoming photographer. And we made a good deal with the frame maker.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And for we came up with this idea for multiple reasons, because I want art to be, I want people to feel comfortable when they walk into an art gallery, that there's something they can buy. If everything is over 500 euros and up, it gets intimidating.
Yes.
So we did some other things to make it more approachable.
Mm-hmm.
But the first edition is one of the things that I'm really proud of, and they are still doing the first edition. Every 2 months they a new photographer sells his or her work at in the Foam Gallery.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and
yeah.
So that was one of your ideas, or did you invent that as a team, that concept?
In my memory, it came from me.
But that's cool. That's a good place to be.
Yeah, yeah, but I don't want that's
it's a good idea, but,
yeah, yeah.
It's about building a collection too, if you want to.
Yeah,
isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah, and for me, the most important thing was feeling that you can also be part of this art scene or industry.
Right, right, exactly. So you can draw yourself into the circle.
Yeah.
In a comfortable, confident way.
Yes.
Confidence.
Yes.
Is the thing.
Yeah.
Again, that goes back to exposure too, because then these people can expose themselves to new things and all the people around them. Okay. So as I'm thinking about this, I'm thinking, what are the topics that are most of interest to you now that you know that you've got Nigeria on your radar, you've got photography, you've got this background in human geography? How do you pull all of that together, and what do you aim your lens at?
Wow. Okay. Can you ask that again?
Yeah. So it's like this little recipe, you know, as I'm looking at it.
Yeah.
You've got your background in human geography.
Yeah.
You've got Foam. So you have a kind of a comfort zone with photography that you didn't have before.
Yeah.
So the question is sort of like, what do you care about? What makes you excited that you want to go photograph?
Yeah. Well, at this point, okay, what important to me is representation.
Okay.
I need to think about this question, because there's so many things.
Yeah.
I think I'm also now in my personal journey going to Nigeria, trying to understand what it means to be Nigerian. And then coming back in the Netherlands, being Dutch, being Nigerian, it can be a bit complicated sometimes. But I feel that what I think is important is just show the beauty and the diversity, also especially the diversity within the Black community.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think, yeah, it's time that we can tell our own stories, and we don't need other people to you know, sometimes I feel like we don't need other people to portray us. Mm-hmm. And I think that's also a dangerous thing to say, because I don't want to say you can do this and you can do, you're allowed to do this and you're allowed to do this, because that's going to be very complicated. But yeah. I do feel that it's time for us to portray us how we want to be seen. That's how I love my Show Your Fro hair project, right, photography series. Right. I just go everywhere in this country and meet beautiful black and brown women, and we talk and we talk and we talk, and in the end I take some pictures, but it's basically an excuse for me to have conversations about our hair, but also about bigger things than that. But I think hair is such a good starting point, because for some people, I know a lot of people say, oh, when you have straight hair you want curls, and when you have curls you want straight, which is true, but this is about something else.
I see.
So
tell me what it's about. Tell us what it's about. So I know that you're interested in black hair, for example.
Yeah.
I would like it if you could tell how you got interested in it, and what sparked the movement for you.
Well, first of all, because growing up I didn't like my hair.
Can you tell us why?
Because there, it's hard, because I feel like there was nothing to like. There was no example that had my hair and that I thought, oh, I want to be like her. I remember I used to put on a scarf over my head, and then what's the English word for that game when you know you're on one leg and you're jumping?
Hopscotch.
You throw something,
right,
and then
you go in the squares.
Yes.
Hopscotch.
Oh yeah. So I used to play that game, and then I would put on the scarf. So when you're jumping, you look down. Mm-hmm. So the scarf would you know, fall next to my head, and I would pretend it was long hair.
Oh,
so,
okay.
So I did everything. I even made this head, and then I would braid hair, and then I would sew it on the cap, so that when I'm wearing the cap, I would have long braids. I even put my hair on a, you know, I use an iron to straighten my hair.
Like a clothing iron?
Yes, yes.
Really?
Yes. That's how much I wanted to have straight hair.
And you probably, was anyone watching you do this? Or
No. I just did it somewhere in the attic where no one saw me.
Really?
Or I asked a friend to help me or whatever, yeah.
Wow, yeah. Okay. And now you are working on this Show Your Fro, but that's not the only thing. It's just, my curiosity would be, what made you look at yourself and say, hey, my hair is beautiful.
Yeah.
I look like this and this is cool.
Yeah.
How do you go from ironing your
hair?
Yeah.
Well, first of all, there was maybe 15 years in between.
Right.
Something happened. One specific thing is when one of my older sisters sent me a video when I was on vacation in Venice, and she sent me this video where she was singing and dancing with one of my nieces, and she cut off all the straight parts of her hair, so the end parts, and this beautiful big afro came out, and in this video she's waving her hair back and forth, and when I saw that, I thought, oh, I want to go home and you know, have that same hair.
Yeah.
So I think she was an example for me. But also, when I was working at Foam, I was so aware that I was the only black girl, first of all, in the whole building, but also in the, like, in that industry. Like, so somehow, instead of feeling awkward and shy about it or whatever, when I went on my interview, I did a big blowout afro because that gave me the confidence. I was like, somehow the bigger my afro was, the more confidence I had. So that's when I first felt
it gave you some sort of sense of power.
So powerful. There's nothing else. Like, I can wear fancy shoes or a beautiful jacket, but my hair was like...
Yeah.
You know, I'm here. You need me. Right. I don't know. So it does something for me.
Right. And it was like a really reclaiming yourself, even if you didn't realize that you were a little bit lost. You can't know that when you're a child.
Yeah. Yeah.
Necessarily. Yeah. It's all about the environment, right? And you were so young that you had nothing to compare it to.
Yeah.
And it's almost subconscious, all this, the hopscotch, and it's subconscious. It's really in there, isn't it?
Yeah, it goes really deep.
It really goes deep.
That's
it
why really goes deep. When I went outside for the first time with my natural hair, and when I look back at pictures from high school, I see that I'm wearing my own hair, but I didn't thought it was pretty, so I just accepted that it was what it was. Mm. Which is very sad. It's sad that I didn't enjoy my hair as much as I do it now. I feel like I lost, I don't know, 25 years or something. Yeah. Even when I look back at the video, I just saw a video of myself when I'm taking out my braids and this big, a lot of hair comes out. And I look at myself in that video and I'm telling myself, oh, you stupid girl, you had no idea how much hair, like I had way more hair than I have now, but I didn't appreciate it at all. So, but now I'm so grateful and I have a lot of conversations about it as well. Yeah.
You know, I think there are multiple things that are good about that, but one of the things is... You've got these photographs. You just said you looked at a video, right?
Yeah.
Now you've got these photographs, and you can never go back to that level of unknowingness.
Yeah.
It's just not going to happen, right?
Yeah.
So now you can go forth in life and have the strength and the commitment to appreciate who you are at every single stage in your life.
Yeah.
So at least you woke up.
Yeah.
That's the deal.
Yeah.
Now you got to stay awake.
Yeah. Right? Exactly.
Maybe that's what the work is about when we talk about representation. And I know that you work very much so with refugees, is what we have to call them, because we haven't come up with a new name at this point.
Yeah.
And I would love it if you could explain KLABU, the NGO, and exactly what you did in Kenya.
Yeah.
Explain that.
So KLABU is an NGO that builds sports clubs in refugee camps, and they set up like sort of a library, so people in the camp can rent balls, jerseys, sport gear, because sport is obviously an important thing also for your mental health, and a lot of people are just waiting, and sport can be like can give this positive feeling, so Wyden and Kennedy, an advertising agency, connected me to KLABU. So KLABU asked me to shoot the campaign for their first sports club. And I thought that was really interesting because it's an NGO, but also a fashion brand, a sports fashion brand. So that combination was really interesting for me. And so they sent me to Kenya, in the north of Kenya, near the border with South Sudan. And for me, it was really important. It was a chance for me to photograph refugees in a way that I think they want to see themselves.
What does that mean?
That means, when you do your research, I looked up series about refugees, or if you Google the word refugee, it's, you only see a lot of sad images. which makes sense because the situation is really, really shit and difficult. But it's the only image we see. So I feel that, and now I'm not only talking about refugees, but what I see is black people in sort of a dependent situation. And it almost feels like they are not people. Mm-hmm. Like it's hard to connect in a way because mm-hmm. it's far away or, you know, they have sand in their eyes. So, you see pictures with, I don't know, hundreds of children. So there's, it's hard to connect. And I think that's wrong. And going to Kakuma gave me the opportunity to show a different side, not of the situation, but of the people, because there is a lot of talent. First of all, the people are beautiful. Let's start with that. They're like everywhere. You see models walking, but there's nothing in me that wants to portray them in their sad situation.
Okay.
Because when I look at them, I see people that, yeah, that you know, that can be my nephew or my niece or my auntie. So why would I want to portray them with flies in their eyes?
Right, right. It's just, it's undignified and disrespectful, I think, coming from your perspective.
To me, I find it disrespectful
mm-hmm.
because it's the only image we get.
Right.
And when I arrived, first thing that happened was children came running up to me and they had flies in their eyes and they had sand in their face and they had broken clothes. So I took one picture and I looked at the picture and I thought, this is not the image I want to make. So I'm not saying it is reality,
mm-hmm.
but there are more realities. Like there are more stories. So why do we keep wanting to see them in this sad way? Why? Like because we have to you know, collect money, or what's the reason why we are so used to seeing black people in a negative situation?
I think that is a very good question, and I think it has multiple answers to it. And I also think that, just to be clear, what you're talking about, this whole business of seeing people with dark skin in situations that are inhumane and undignified,
yeah.
goes way outside of the refugee
yeah.
situation.
Yeah. Yeah.
For me, honestly, it's everywhere and always like that.
Yeah.
Negative, or for me, it's the orange jumpsuit, you know, the prisoner. It's the same, right? Or someone who's in handcuffs.
Yeah.
Or hungry or starved in some ghetto somewhere in just the whole ghetto universe, anywhere on the face of the earth, there we are. So I think what you're doing, your work, is tremendously important because it gives us the opportunity to reclaim and to claim in the first place new narratives. You just have to do it.
Yeah, because it's our time now. We have,
yeah.
I have a camera. Why, what else am I going to do?
Right, right.
So,
because you know personally firsthand, you just said it, you know how it feels when you don't see yourself reflected
yeah.
in a positive light. And you're here, you're in a country that has enough food and clean water and all of that good stuff, but that's not the only thing you need growing up,
that's
right?
It. Yeah, yeah.
You need to feed
yeah.
your spirit and your sense of self
yeah.
equally as much as your little
and
stomach.
And I want to tell our stories, you know, I want
mm-hmm.
to tell our hair stories, our about our skin, anything, like And I wanted to be told by us.
Right.
It's as simple as that. And I think I feel so passionate about it because until now, it hasn't been told by us.
Right.
So even though sometimes things are frustrating, I also feel so excited mm-hmm. that we can now tell stories that we want to tell or show people, our people, how we want to be seen.
Yeah.
And I think the project in Kenya went really well because when I came back with the photos mm-hmm. and we had an exhibition, there was one guy coming up to me and he said, I think your pictures are beautiful, but they're also a bit glamorous and at the end of the day, it is about refugees. Mm. And I was actually really happy with his comments because I asked him, why is it too glamorous for you? Because they are refugees, they are not allowed to put makeup on or, you know, to get their hair done. If I take a picture of you, you will also just look in the mirror for a second to see if you look nice. Everybody wants to look nice. If you were forced to flee your country, doesn't mean you want to be photographed with flies in your eyes.
Right. Exactly.
So where in that process do we feel that people are okay with being photographed like that? Like, where does that how did we get so far away from I don't even know how to say it.
I think I understand. I do. I think it's something like this. I mean, you can tell me if this is the deal or not in your mind. Mm-hmm. The question sort of sounds like, how did we, as humans, get so comfortable portraying other people's as inhuman? Why is that?
Yeah,
why are you comfortable
exactly
with that? Where did you get the idea that we're not human?
Well, right? I mean, we know where it comes from.
We do know where it comes from.
But
we do know where it comes from. To be specific, we do, right?
Yeah.
But the crazy part about that is, do we really, really know where it came from? We could sit here and say, well, yeah, you know, it's slavery. And you would start somewhere maybe in the 1400s or 1500s and you'd start looking at that. But the harder part of it is when you go back all the way to the Greeks and the Romans and you've got Aristotle who's saying really cool, interesting things. Like, for example, if you think about something positive that he would say, what would Aristotle say? He would say that an idea that you examine is proof that you're intelligent, but you don't have to accept it. So examining an idea is proof of intelligence, but you don't have to accept it. But then you would turn around and say that some people are born to be masters and some people are born to be slaves. So if it goes that deep, and that's the Greeks, and then we come to where we are now, and you're still having conversations with people about why can't this woman have on a nice shirt? And why can't she have on this lipstick? Why is that too glamorous? Well, what does the person say when you answer them? What did he say? That's the answer I want. Did he have an answer for you?
Well, did he have an answer? He said it's too glamorous. And then I asked him, oh yeah, why? And then he said, well, they are refugees at the end of the day. Like, and it's not because he necessarily thinks the people are not worthy, but why would I make it look nicer than it is? That's what I felt that he, and this is specifically about refugees, of course.
Right, I understand.
And then understand. That made me realize people think that, I don't know, that they are, that refugees are crying 24/7 or have dirt in their face 24/7. That's not true.
Yeah.
It's just not true.
Yeah.
Like, I've met so many beautiful people and, you know, I brought makeup specifically for the black skin and we did the makeup and they were enjoying it. And why not? Why not? Why can't we look at them as models? Like, because seriously, they are models.
Right.
Why they are bigger than their situation. So for me, it was also, a beautiful project because human geography and photography comes together in this Klabu project. And even when I was in the camp, you know, I was having such a good time, and I was meeting so many nice people, and I was pushing myself every time when I was doing a shoot, like, how far can I go? And then I ended up with a picture of a girl that is having a golden necklace in her mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, it's just like a badass picture. Like, she looks so... She was 8 months pregnant at that time, 16 years old. Mm-hmm. And then I looked at the picture of the girl, and she was just... Like, she was a, I don't know, a celebrity or something. And then I showed the picture.
Mm-hmm.
And for Klabu, they thought, what are we gonna do with this picture? Because it's not related to sports. It's not, but for me, it was about a bigger thing. I wanted to show the energy this girl had.
Yeah.
And I was also very excited because I knew that no one else could have made that picture, because she was naked on the top.
Mm-hmm.
And she would only allow me in her little tent.
Yeah.
And I showed her the picture, and she was very shy, but she loved the picture. And so it's, yeah, sometimes I got a little bit off track so I kind of understand that sometimes they felt, okay, but Coco, what are you doing now? But because for me, it was just such an important opportunity to show this different side.
Yeah.
And so sometimes I got a little bit too excited, maybe.
But maybe when you have photographs like that, maybe you have to keep them for yourself, for your own, you know
yeah.
what I mean?
Yeah,
for
yeah.
Your, like, you do their commercial work, and you got that right, obviously. I mean, we can put some of that work in this article, and they can see what Klabu was looking for.
Yeah.
That's one thing.
Yeah.
But then you have your own work, which is personal to you.
Yeah.
Just keep it for yourself,
yeah.
for your own
yeah.
projects.
Yeah.
Then you won't have to have that. It's, I think it's a form of censorship. And I don't mean that in a negative way.
Mm-hmm.
It's just an editing process. Like, they know what they want.
Right? Yeah, yeah. But and that makes sense. That makes sense. I mean, it becomes difficult when people don't know what they want.
Right, exactly.
But I had the freedom to do this shoot from my perspective.
Yeah.
And yeah, I agree. Some of the images are maybe more close to my personal work,
right.
you know, and sending a different message. So
right.
it doesn't mean I cannot use the pictures. It's just sending a different message.
Exactly.
So yeah.
Exactly. So in terms of using the work for your personal stories, I think, you know, fair enough, because you have to at some point capture the moment, because you can't get it twice.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You're, if you're looking through your lens
yeah.
and you see something that's nice, and the person is agreeable to letting you take the photograph,
yeah.
I think it's fair game, you know? But
Me
it
too.
Goes on the side.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It goes
yeah,
on the
yeah,
side.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think that also balances out why you do what you do with your commercial work.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Sort of keeps you fueled.
Yeah.
Okay, so I know a couple of the photographs I'm thinking about, and if I tell you the person's name, you'll be able to describe it.
Yeah.
Then we can add it to the podcast, to the images, because it will help people read the photograph,
yeah.
if you
okay.
will,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
So what I would like you to describe is the story behind Lillian, is that correct?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
How about you describe that for us, and then we'll put that in there.
Yeah.
Go.
So Lillian is a young woman from Ethiopia, and she's actually a few years ago she was the refugee how do you say that, like, she was a model, she
okay.
was the
like an actual model, like a fashion model. Or
no, they like did. They did like a model,
like a model citizen kind of a thing.
Yeah, but then in the refugee camp.
Okay, so like
okay. She was sorry. Okay, I know the word. Lillian is from Ethiopia.
Yeah,
and she was Miss Refugee a few years ago.
Oh.
And I was supposed to shoot her But she didn't show up. So I waited for half an hour or maybe longer. And just when I thought I wanted to leave, because we also don't have phone numbers or anything, so it's really hard to connect or to make appointments. And then when I wanted to leave, I saw her coming from far away. She was on the back of a motorbike, and she came my way. And it was a beautiful image because the sand was blowing up on the back of this bike, and it was like a movie scene. So when she arrived, she said, "Oh, I'm sorry, I'm late." I said, "Don't worry." I asked the driver if he could stay, because I just loved the whole picture in its totality. So, right. And then I was wearing this white blouse. So I said, "Okay, you know what? You take my blouse, because I think the color is nice, looks good with your skin." And then I had this fabric, and I wrapped it as a head wrap for on her head. And that's when I took the picture. So I dropped all the ideas that I had for her, because when I saw her on this motorbike, I just realized this is it. She just looks badass. So why change that? Yeah. And also, I like the combination of what's reality, because she was on that bike, you know.
Yeah.
But making it a considered image.
Yes. Exactly. Okay, I like that. So I'm going to go backwards into that for something maybe you don't have the answer to it, but how does one become Miss Refugee? Who organizes something like that? Is that coming from the refugees?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
They do that on their own?
Yeah.
And how do they decide? What's it based on?
I don't know.
Isn't that a good question, though?
I don't know.
Like something made them pull her out. It's not, you know, when you do, I don't know, beauty pageants, you got all these categories that you have to hit. And I wonder what categories they picked. You know, like, do you give to your community? Are you a good dancer? Can you swim?
Oh,
do you
I think this is only about beauty, about how you look. Maybe. I don't know. I don't know if this is also about if you give back or anything.
Right.
I'm not sure.
Right.
Because another friend, she also became Miss Refugee a few months ago. So I should ask her actually what it means, and also how they pick you.
You see?
Yeah.
Because it's interesting if it's about all the different categories and, you know, social participation and community involvement, and can you dance and can you sing?
Mm-hmm.
That's one animal. But if it's just I'm beautiful, it's exactly what you just said. It proves your point.
Yeah.
Even they see themselves as stunning.
Yeah,
you see my point?
Yeah.
That's
you know, and that's, I think that's so important, because it's not me saying, "Oh, look how beautiful those people are."
Right.
They know. Look at they you
right.
know, they know how they look.
This is what
but
I'm
then
saying.
But then there's no this is the thing, there's no one. The moment you are in a refugee camp, you're locked up. You're like the door closes. You're not part of the rest of the world anymore.
Yeah.
So, so with this project and also other projects that I want to do in the future should open those doors, because I'm not here to say like, "Oh, you know, I'm gonna change this and this," and no, I don't even believe in you know, saving the planet or stuff like that, but I do want to give them a platform so that the rest of the world can see that they exist.
Right.
I'm not saying I'm gonna, you know, make all the problems go away or this or that. Just open the door, and then the rest of the world can tap in.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Okay. So a second image, it's, I can only describe it this way.
Yeah.
It's two girls, and I know that you brought makeup for them.
Yeah.
They're not from the same country, and that's all I can tell you. Do you know the picture I'm talking about?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, they are, I think they are both from Somalia, actually.
Okay.
Yeah. So, Hibo and Hapna.
Okay.
One is a teacher, and the other one is a stay-home mom. And yeah, so I wanted to photograph two girls, two young women. And they introduced me to these ladies, and they were wearing a scarf, headscarf. And I wanted to, no, sorry, I have to explain it differently. Hibo and Hapna. Yeah, so they introduced me to Hibo and Hapna, two young women from Somalia. And I brought this makeup. So first we started to setting up the makeup and having conversations and laugh. And the two girls, they didn't know each other. So when we started shooting, first it was a bit uncomfortable for them, but then it became really nice and we had a lot of fun. And then after the shoot, they became friends. So, and they still are. So that's really nice. And it was, you know what, it was just a nice experience also for them to be a model for a day. You know, why not?
Right.
Why not? So when they think like, oh, the pictures are too glamorous, you know, with all the makeup and all, and also maybe the way they look, because I always try to portray people in their strength and in their confidence, in a confident way.
Mm-hmm.
So they look really, you know, they look really
like strong.
They look really strong.
Yeah.
And that's also important for me because they are strong. Basically, that's it. They are strong. I don't need to explain anything else.
Right, right.
Those people are so strong. So maybe this is what I find disrespectful when we see them with tears or flies or sand in their eyes, in their face.
Right.
In this way, it feels disrespectful because those people are the most strong people. You know, they had, God knows what they all experienced and what they had to.
Right.
So maybe because I want to make that clear, because when when I'm talking about pictures, you know, with the flies,
mm-hmm.
It is reality. I saw it. I experienced it myself. I'm not saying those pictures are not real. But it's disrespectful because first of all, I ask myself, does this person want to see him or herself in this way? That's a really easy way for me to know when to leave my camera and when not.
Right.
So if you see something that is visually beautiful, but I just decide for myself, does this person want to see him or herself in this way? Obviously, you can never know. But this is, you know, when you're traveling as a photographer, you have to make fast decisions.
Right.
And sometimes you see things that are really beautiful, but then it's really easy for me to just leave my camera because I feel like, okay, maybe the colors and the lights is nice, but this person is not proud of sleeping on the street.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So, and then if I want to take a picture of that person, maybe I have to start a conversation and find out what this person is proud of.
Right.
Because I don't want people to take pictures of me when I'm, you know, when I'm in my misery.
Like at your worst.
Yeah.
Exactly. You know what's funny? That this is, for me, it's not the first time you've explained what you're trying to do, but I can see how difficult it is to explain, no matter how many times you've tried to do it. And I just had this idea. If we, you know, when you look at Instagram, it's, snapshots of the coolest moments of someone's life.
Mm-hmm.
No one's maybe making pictures of themselves sick in their bed or when their hair is bad. I mean, people do, but you know it's not really for that purpose, right?
Yeah.
This is kind of a reverse Instagram that you're talking about to me. You see?
Yeah.
So what we get from these refugee camps and from our own existences, we know this, is just these bad, every day is a bad hair day. Every day we're not at our best. Every day we're in handcuffs. Every day we're in an orange jumpsuit. Every day they've got flies in their eyes and distended stomach.
Yeah.
That's like reverse Instagram.
Right? Yeah, in a way,
so maybe if we sort of think about what you're trying to do is pull out some highlights in their life. They also have highlights. That's all you're saying.
Yeah.
Right?
But it's really important for the rest of the world to see that.
Exactly. Exactly, because it sounds very, very simple to say, but it's not very simple to do, and it's not simple to reverse.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. That makes sense to me. That makes sense to me. Are there any other images that you really want to focus on? Because those are three really good ones. Because the young lady that you talked about who's pregnant, we could use that. Here's an opportunity to use it.
Yeah.
If you want to tell anything else about that story, we can put that one in.
I think what I can say about that picture is that it made me realize this is more about photography. Is that first I thought when I started photography, I thought that fashion photography is like the highest photography you can get. It's you know, in a studio with a lot of gear and people, big crew. And I thought that the photography that I did, because it's mostly one-on-one, that it's like as a hobby or something. And now I see more and more that for my type of photography, the social side of photography is 90% of the picture. That's I think a beautiful example of a picture that shows everything that happened before I took the picture.
Okay.
Not that you can see it specifically, but you can tell that you don't just walk up to a girl who is 16 and 8 months pregnant and take this picture. So this picture is important for me because it just captures everything that I love about photography. And that's the social side of it. Having conversations, making the girl feel comfortable, making her feel look good. But that's just me personally, always trying to, you know, push the boundaries. How far can I go? What if you put this necklace in your teeth, you know, between your teeth? What will happen then? And treating them not as a refugee, but as someone who I'm photographing, a model, or, you know. So that was that's why that picture is important to me. All that time that I invest before I take that picture, that's the best part of photography for me.
Okay. Yeah. That makes sense. Okay. I'm going to skip to something else because I describe you as a director and a photographer or photographer and a director. It makes a difference which one you put first, I think.
Yeah.
Or it doesn't. It's up to you. But the idea is that your film, which is called About the Neighbors, I would like it if you could describe a little bit about what that was for you, because I'd like to include that
in this article. Well, so I was doing a directing course, and at the end of the course, we had to film a scene. And I remember thinking, I'm not going to film a scene. I want to make a film. And then the teacher said, don't go and make a film, because there will become too much. There will be too much on your plate, and you won't be able to, you know, learn everything that is important in one scene. So I kind of got that, but I still felt like, yeah, whatever. I have this idea, so I'm going to do it anyway.
Right.
And I had help from two people that helped me a lot during this process. So this film is about a young girl who lives in a flat, and there are two flats opposite from each other, and in the one flat a young girl lives, and in the other flat an old man lives, and this old man is alone, and the girl sees him and she thinks he's a bit sad, and she just wants to do little things to make his life a little bit nicer. So some things were really important for this film, because to be honest, I never really took that film very serious. I mean, when I was shooting it, yes, but then when it was finished, I felt like, yeah, that was it. It was actually when you saw it and you said, hey, I really like what you made, made me rethink what I actually did. And looking back, I realized that some things were really important for me. First of all, it was that I wanted to shoot in a flat. Because somehow I felt I want to tell this, you know, sweet story in an environment that is, I don't know, something that I can relate to at least. And also I wanted to work with non-actors.
Yes.
And then somehow I ended up having no dialogue. I think because there was just nothing to say in a way. There was no need, like there was no reason for me to put dialogue in. Right. It wasn't necessarily on purpose.
But you just showed.
I just showed that there was it. There was, and then I also found it important that the young girl had some sort of different cultural background than the Dutch one.
So who did you find for that role? Tell us about the little girl.
Yeah. Oh, she.
You don't have to say her name. You know.
Well, I know her name. Her name is Sophia, and actually the same as how I do photography. First, we met and we had this fun day that we went to the museum and we took pictures and you know we got to know each other. So that when we were on set, she knows me, she trusts me. But it was also a really good learning moment because I didn't know when to stop. You know, when I'm shooting, I was shooting and I just, every time I heard myself saying, oh, just one more, come on, this and that. And then someone said, Coco, this is, you know, this is a child. This is against the rules.
Right.
So, I had to
wrap it up.
Yes. But I think again, the human connection there was that's the only way I can do my work. I don't know how else to do it. So, but now I can appreciate it more and more. Because I can see that you get a certain image because of who you are as a person. So yeah, now that's in the pictures, but also in that film, the person who's shooting it, the director or the photographer, you can only get as far as people allow you. So.
Right, right.
So you have to invest, and you have to be honest and real and open and kind and. At least that's what worked for me, and also that's just people, work with people.
So I think I've got just one technical question. Just led me to it, which is this. You know, all this business of, you know, being kind and being open and being authentic. All of that, if you have that gift and you can do it, will get the door open.
Yeah.
Okay, so now the door is open. Now you're in the room with this person that you're interested in photographing. What do you do physically, technically, that makes the people appear, you know, larger than life, bigger than their circumstances? There are things that you do. I've seen you do it, but can you share them? Will you share them?
Yeah, of course. So what I do sometimes is I just put my camera so the other person can see the actual gear. Because sometimes the camera, you know, if you have a big lens, it can be intimidating.
Yes.
So I want the people to see the camera before I start using it. So I just put it on the table or whatever, they can see it. Another thing what I do is I always go a bit low so the person will look bigger. That's just something I naturally do. I don't know, that just happened and it works for me. And another thing is I just talk while I'm shooting. I'm not saying, okay, put your left hand there and this and there. No, I just have a conversation. And of course, I put them in certain places where the light is nice. But it's just having fun and talking and make them, yeah, and making them feel comfortable and making them feel proud as well.
Yeah. You can feel it in your photography, you know? You can see it in there. There's a lot of sky when you're outside. You personally, I'm talking about you as a photographer. There's a lot of sky in your pictures.
Yeah.
Right? Which, for me, looking at it, gives this sensation of, I don't know, infinite possibility.
Yeah.
Like there's no roof on it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's
Does that make sense?
That makes sense. That's what happens when you go low and the person rises, and then above that there's sky. It wasn't intentional, but that's what happened when I was in Kenya in the camp. Yeah. I don't know. I didn't really. That's maybe think. Come to think of it, it's also because I didn't want to show constantly the tents and the camp itself, because I still feel that it will distract people and putting my people or the people that I photographed into a certain box.
Yes.
So I wanted to take them out of their context. Because otherwise they're just like, again, they're in their refugee environment.
Right.
And I wanted to show who they are without their situation.
Right.
As a person. Right. Basically, that's it.
Right. I think that's very freeing for people, no matter where you are, what you just said. Showing who they are without their situation. Right?
Yeah.
That's very, very freeing. Okay. I have this last series of questions, I think, that is, for me, based around Nigeria, because I know Nigeria has a huge place in your life, in your heart, in your personality, and what you're trying to do next. What do you want us to know about Nigeria? What would you like to share about Nigeria?
Well, I've only been in Lagos until now, so I can talk about Lagos as a city, but... what do I want people to know about Nigeria? Well, I'm just really proud that I'm Nigerian. Whenever I am there, wherever I look, every time I'm like, whoa, those people are my people. Wow, look at how beautiful they are. It's insane. They're so confident and fast and funny and but I don't know, I don't necessarily want other people to think of it. I just want to get to know it myself at this point. And it's our time now.
So you're still in the discovery stage. You just have to sort of you have to process it maybe for yourself.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
See what it means to you, how does it fit and all of that. And I think, you know, that's just a process I would think of growing and learning, because you're young now and you can look back at this and you can listen to this podcast and you can look at the pictures you've taken and you can see yourself evolving. That's the cool part about being an artist. Or creative, is that your work is naturally documenting your progress.
Yeah, that's right? It goes side by side with my own journey and my work. Someone said that the moment I went to Nigeria, my work changed, and I can see that something changed. And maybe it's about the people that are in front of my lens or the way I photograph, but something changed and I cannot go back. I don't want to go back. I think it did something.
It opened you up.
Yes.
Didn't it?
Yeah. And there are so many stories. I'm so excited that there's a whole country waiting for me to explore. There are so many people to meet and so many things to experience. So Nigeria is by far the best gift that my father gave me.
That's really beautiful. that might be a good place to stop. How do you feel?
That's good. Yeah.
Coco, thank you so much for being part of the Maker Podcast.
Thank you for having me.
We are thrilled to have you here. I cannot wait to put this together for the universe so they can experience the universe that you have inside of you and start to know who you are as you start to figure out who you are. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mana. Thank you.